hello there. It's another day. I'm Jim Harrington.
And I'm Bill Knight. Hope you had a great weekend, but it's over and the new week is upon us. It's always kind of interesting on Monday because you sit there and you look at the news and you just see the hash that stopped somewhere around Friday. And anything that happened over the weekend, everybody takes... It's a different world. There used to be reporters and things going on all the time, but now, you know, the weekends are taking off, and I don't know. But either way...
You know, what's his name? Trevor Noah. He used to be the host of The Daily Show.
Yeah.
I guess he emceed the press, national press dinner that they had on Saturday night. It was a big deal. You know, it's the one that they all... look forward to all year long. It's when all these reporters get together and talk about how important they are.
Of course.
And yeah. and what a difference they're all making to the world. You get Fox sitting with CNN, sitting with MSNBC, laughing and just talking about how great they are. And just it's a glad fest for them all, right? But Trump didn't go to him. Trump, he was not impressed by how they presented the axe. He always seemed to be the target no matter what he did. And he figured that awkward that I'm not going to give him any fuel for their fire, and he didn't go. But Biden goes because, you know, Biden's sitting there amongst fans, amongst people who like what he did. Although this was kind of a jab. Trevor Noah, who's a liberal, you know, he's up there doing his shtick, his comedy shtick, and he says this.
Ever since you've come into office, things are really looking up. You know, gas is up, rent is up, food is up, everything. No, it really has been a tough first year for you, Mr. President. And sure.
A tough first year. I mean, this is his third year.
How many
year.
Years? Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, the yeah. 3 years. But you know,
what's interesting about that is that he says all those things, the rent is up, gas is up, food is up. And Biden, they show Biden, and he's laughing. He's laughing at the audience. He's laughing at America, essentially, you know? And I'm thinking, do you know what the heck you're laughing at, Joe? You're laughing at us.
Yeah. They don't care. See, that's the whole thing. They want to trivialize it. So, you know, was he really thumbing his nose at Biden, or was he just saying, we don't care? You know, there are surveys out there that say that 3-1, that liberals are just so entrenched in what they believe, they will do it at all cost. And that's it. It's their way or the highway, and they don't care how bad it is. It's good. It's good for you. They want more government. They want more control, and it doesn't matter that power's up, gas is up, groceries are up, shelves are empty, people are losing their jobs, you know, you're going to be sitting here wondering what the hell you can do just to, you know, get from the 1st to the 30th, you know, in a few months from now, you know, every month. And that's a pretty sad situation for us to be in.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said. You know, what amazes me about the times we're living in right now is liberals are attacking liberals now. You have the far left Hamas supporters who are, you know, demonstrating on college campuses, and they're not happy with Joe. They're not happy with the
well,
with
what
the
are they
Democrats.
Gonna do? Well, who are they going to replace him with?
I think that they are just about almost at the point where they would like to see a change in government altogether. People, I mean, and I see some of these college kids being interviewed. God bless them. With all due respect, they're young. They probably spend most of their life studying or paying attention to what happened, you know, in high school sports or whatever, or maybe making the cheerleading squad. And all of a sudden, they're alone on campus, and they're being told that now they can make a difference. This is what their professors are saying to these, as Rush used to say, minds of mush. They're saying, you can make a difference. It's your turn. It's your time. And these kids are going out there on these greens and supporting other people, by the way, who are there who aren't even students in their school. You know, that's the problem. You have a bunch of young people out there, and they all look like they're students, but they're not. A lot of them are being shipped into a campus, and and people will say, how do you know? Well, some people give it away. A lot of them do the old Antifa routine where they cover their face completely with a scarf so you can't see their face so that you don't know that they're the same people who were protesting on another campus down the road not too long ago, you know? And the other thing is this, Bill. I saw an aerial shot of one of the greens, the college campus greens, and all of the kids had the same color and style tent. They all had, it's like they all went to the same store together.
And it was bought for them.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, so it was bought for them. And the kids today, you know, to their credit, they haven't been educated. Some of that is our own fault as parents.
Yeah.
You know, it's incumbent upon us, and so you have to take a little bit of credit for that they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they know what they learned in school that we sent them off to. You don't miss that bus. You get on that bus. You forgot your lunch. Get your lunch. Go to school. And you bring back good grades, mister, or you don't get to watch TV tonight. Well, that's fine. But that's not everything you should have done. You should have been watching what they were learning.
Yeah.
And what they were being taught.
Who was teaching them. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And now we've got a generation out there. Now, they are making up their minds. They're seeing that what's going on is not right. So their interpretation is, well, maybe it's time to get rid of what we've got and go with something altogether new. And that is just what the people that have been dissecting this country bit by bit want. Because once that happens, they can come in. The Democratic base right now, they want more control. Oh, you're going to get control. Oh, yes, you are. And you think these kids that are sitting there going, hey, let's just blow it all up and start again. Well, you're not going to have the Constitution anymore. That's going to go out the window. And somebody's going to come in there with this utopia, euphoria thing. Oh, all is good if we just do this.
I heard a statistic over the weekend, Bill.
Mm.
A third of all college students are think that communism is not a bad thing.
That's true.
A third.
I've read that before.
Yeah. Think about that for a second, folks. You know, kids should look at their grandparents, because a lot of the grandparents back in the 60s protested on college campuses the exact same way. Not maybe for the same thing. Maybe they were protesting the war, but they all thought that they had the answer. They all thought they were right.
Here's an oddity for you. If a third of all the kids that way, you know, well, you divide it up. I mean, that means that 66.6% don't agree with that.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, the numbers, you know, 333-666, I'm going, boy, what the hell are we in?
Bill, you know I do think this is a battle between good and evil.
It is.
You know, we're fighting for the soul of our country right now. You know, and by the way, don't think it's by happenstance that we're having all of these problems on all of these different campuses around the country. I mean, it is being paid for. We heard this on Friday by a Soros-funded organizations.
Yeah,
thousands of dollars. I mean, I think I heard the figure was $3,000, or just about $3,000. Per protester, professional protester. These are anarchists. These are people who don't give a damn.
I'd like to see one of their resumes. Yeah, I'm a professional protester. While I did this and I did that, and when nobody was looking, I did this.
Well, I mean, I think you probably put yourself on a list because you want to get paid for what you're doing, and if you will show up and you'll throw bricks, you qualify. You know, I mean, these are flamethrowers. These are anarchists.
Well, what when soldiers go to war, what are they supposed to do? Blow things up and break things until the other side cries uncle. So the protesters are literally soldiers in the United States here to set things on fire, break things, and blow things up until we, the people, say uncle.
George Washington University over the weekend in D.C., there were protests there, too, and they went on one of the big statues of our first president, George Washington, and they hung a Hamas flag and draped it with a kafef, it's like the scarf, I believe, that they wear in the Middle East. You've seen it before. It's the headband.
If we went over to their country and did that to one of their statues, what would happen to us?
Well, you'd have a hard time getting out of the country.
You'd probably be beheaded.
Yeah.
Or if they left you alive, they would cut off your hands and fingers, or your fingers and hands, just to say the harming things of your body have been removed. You know, like a thief. You know, if you steal something, the hand that was guilty is the one that gets chopped off. Well,
yeah, they have a very permanent way and a very specific way of handling crimes.
Maybe we ought to punish them by their laws.
Well, you know, I heard a Middle Eastern leader. I was going to say Muslim leader. I don't know that he was a representative of the faith, but he was a representative of one of the countries, and he was very articulate, this guy. He was dressed in the Middle Eastern garb, and he was talking at a press conference, and he said, "Let me say this in English so that people understand what I'm saying." And one of the reporters said, "Well, I have translation on my..." No, he says, "I want to say this in English so there is no confusion." He says, "I predict that most of the terrorists in the future are going to come out of the European countries because of the weakness right now of the European governments, because they don't deal with terrorists very well, because they allow them to do so much in these countries and get away with it, that this is where the terrorists are going to come from." And I thought, my God, he's absolutely correct. Them. Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And they're coming from here. So, you know, back to the point, our youth, they don't know any better because they were not taught any better. They were purposely misguided and divided, and now they're just going, you know, we'll have none of this. As a matter of fact, we'll blow it all up. And, you know, you sit there and go, when are the Republicans going to engage? I saw the story. Actually, it was in a liberal media, but it's correct. Republicans don't like somebody that won't stand in line and march to the... In other words, if you have an opinion as a Republican, the rhinos don't want that. They want you to be lockstep like, you know, Democrats are. And I'm like going, we do have a political problem. What we need to do is just flush the roles and very methodically rebuild it with people that believe in the Constitution, believe in the principles of this country, and right this ship. Otherwise, she's listing pretty heavily and she's going to sink.
Well, you know, I have a great deal of respect for the young people of our society.
Oh, I do too.
And I really do. I think they're God's gift to us. And I know that the problem they're going through is that for many of these young people, they've, like I said, they've spent most of their time thinking about the things that affect their little worlds they live in, you know, the football team or maybe the cheerleading squad or getting A's on their finals or all these things that are so important to them at the time that they're living in. But like I said, then they get to college and some of these rotten professors. And I have to say this, I mean it sincerely, not every professor is rotten, but boy, there are some terrible, terrible professors. And I point specifically to Harvard and Yale and Princeton and all of these big Ivy League schools that have abused their reputations by hiring these clowns with an agenda. They give them importance by affiliating them with their school. You know, they'll take somebody who is a radical and they'll make them a tenured professor on their campus, and that gives them more credibility. Well, he's a professor of history at Yale. Oh my goodness, is he? You know, I saw a cartoon, Bill, yesterday. It showed somebody, an employer, looking at a resume, and he says, "I see you graduated first from Harvard. We're not looking for any Ivy League troublemakers in our business right now." And I thought, well, that's essentially what they're doing. It may take a while, but if they keep doing what they're doing, people are not going to want to have their kids affiliated with the schools. You know, when you have guys like Robert Kraft, who is the owner of the New England Patriots, a billionaire, a very successful man, saying, you know, "I went to Columbia. I don't like what Columbia is doing, so I'm going to withhold giving you guys any more of my money for the time being until you either straighten out or, and if you don't straighten out, you're not getting any more of my money." And I think to myself, well, you need more guys like Robert Kraft, because no matter what happens on these campuses, Bill, they respond to money. It's a business.
But the problem is that's where Soros steps in with money. Oh, don't worry. I give you all the money you need.
I like the accent. The accent is very good.
Thank you. Well, it's because of my heritage. But we will give you what money you need. Let me have a little input.
I should point out that Bill has some Russian blood in him. That's why he says
Russian German. Yeah.
Yes.
I'll tell you a story after the podcast.
Good. Something to look forward to.
Another night story. Just what you need.
Hey, listen, I don't know if you heard this or not, but on Sunday morning, President Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis met privately for several hours in Miami. Trump and DeSantis had not spoken since the end of the Republican primary. It was a very bitter primary, too. But, you know, they spoke for several hours on Sunday, and there's some speculation that maybe there's some reconciliation here, and maybe there might be either vice presidency in the offing for Ron DeSantis.
There may be something else, too.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah.
The something else could be is we don't have a backup plan. And, I mean, let's be honest, you know, the Dems have stacked the deck. Yes, his immunity case is at the Supreme Court, but, you know, now Lindsey Graham came out and said, well, you know, it's probably going to be knocked down to the lower courts, and they're going to decide what Trump does have immunity over and what he doesn't. And I'm like going, he has immunity. If you bring it down to the lower courts, in my opinion, it's going to go to the wrong courts that are all left, and the left has already said he's got no immunity. And if you leave it to that, you know, now it does open up.
You make a very interesting point. You said it's a backup plan, meaning if Trump, for some reason, is not able to actually run for the presidency, if they do something that stops him, the Republican Party needs to have a fallback plan.
Right. That's what I'm saying. And I think Trump, because he really is in charge of, there's right now the Republican Party is divided. There are the old oligarchs, the rhinos, and then, you know, there's Laura Trump in there and the voting base, which goes behind Trump. If he goes, this is my protege, this is the guy. Yeah, we've had our differences, but every father and son has had a difference. Every brother and brother has had a difference.
Right.
Every family member has had one. You know, if they can sit there and put those aside, then that gives a certain amount of confidence. And then Trump goes on. He could still get to the election and win the thing. But if he doesn't, he's just got to hold on. And if DeSantis became the president, anything against Trump would be dismissed. So there's, in my mind, there's a survival mode there. You have to, because you've got to keep yourself and your family safe. And you've got to keep the principles of what you're fighting for, the movement going.
Yeah.
So that would be how I interpret that.
I think it's a good observation. You know, I guess it was Friday and Thursday, end of last week, they were in the Supreme Court arguing presidential immunity. And Justice Kavanaugh asked a very interesting, he talked about what happens with Obama and his droning? Listen.
How about President Obama's drone strikes?
So the Office of Legal Counsel looked at this very carefully and determined that, number one, the federal murder statute does apply to the executive branch. The president wasn't personally carrying out the strike, but the aiding and abetting laws are broad. And it determined that a public authority exception that's built into statutes and that applied particularly to the murder statute because it talks about unlawful killing did not apply to the drone strike. So this is actually the way that the system should function. The Department of Justice takes criminal law very seriously. It runs it through the analysis very carefully with established principles. It documents them, it explains them, and then the president can go forward in accordance with it. And there is no risk of prosecution for that course of activity.
Thank you for your...
That's Department of Justice Prosecutor Michael Dreeben. You know, it's funny. This is an aside. You would think that, and I guess you hire them for their brains, not their voice. But but Michael Dreeben sounds like he sounds gentle. Okay, I'll just leave it at that. Okay, and the other gentleman who was representing President Trump sounded like he must have been screaming all night, and he lost his voice. And you would think that these guys would say, "Hey, look, I want somebody out there who stands there with a presence like Cary Grant or Clark Gable, and I want somebody with a voice that's going to command the room." Because believe it or not, by the way, optics do matter, even in a Supreme Court
even
setting.
Even audibles matter, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you would have thought somebody would say, "Look, I want the smartest guy, but I want somebody who controls the room." Go ahead.
He said something interesting. He said, "Well, you know, I mean, with everything that they did and going after him, but Obama didn't commit the act of murder." Okay. Well, crime bosses never gave the act of murder. They gave the orders.
Sure. Absolutely.
And they got prosecuted, didn't they?
Yeah.
So what's the diff? With that analogy, what is
If they lose immunity, there is no difference. Every time a president orders a drone strike, by the way, what makes Obama unique is some of his drone strikes were against, they were known terrorists, but they were terrorists who were born in the United States, which makes them United States citizens.
So it's murder.
Which would have been considered murder if he didn't have presidential immunity. You know, it was Stephen Miller, who former advisor to President Trump, was on one of the talk shows over the weekend. I believe he was on with Chris Salcedo on Newsmax on Friday. He said this.
If they said there's no immunity for official acts, the moment Joe Biden leaves office, every single red city and red state DA in the country can charge him for financial crimes related to illegal student loan bailouts, can charge him for war crimes related to deaths of service members overseas, can charge him for human trafficking, human smuggling, and by the way, more election interference than you can even count. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of indictments for election interference would all be possible by any red state DA, any red state prosecutor, any conservative DA anywhere in the country. That would be the future that they would be creating if they were to accept Dreeben's argument.
So it's not just about Trump here, folks. Don't think this is a...
No. I was going to bring that up, that Biden should be guilty of war crimes. And, you know, immunity shouldn't matter while you're the president. If a president doesn't have immunity during or after his presidency, then, you know, hey, the lid is off. Hmm. It's all fair game. So if depending on what they do or how they proceed, even if they drop it down to the lower courts, I'm saying go after Biden. Go after him now. But go one step further and go after everybody under him that helped carry out those orders, because they're an accomplice. They knew. I mean, let's see, if we're gonna go down this rabbit hole, let's just go down it.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how they decide. Some people, I saw where Lindsey Graham said he believes it's going to be kicked back to the lower courts, which I think is a cop-out myself. I think right now it's at the Supreme Court. They've heard the arguments. There's nothing really more to be said. Kicking it downstairs again, letting them make the decision, and then only having it to bounce back to the Supreme Court again is a waste of our time, our money, our resources. Make the friggin' decision like a bunch of grown-ups down there in Washington and move on. The fact of the matter is the decision is not a hard one to make. You heard what we said this morning. That should be enough. What we talked about in the last 5 minutes should be enough. You don't want to have every single president from every single party be prosecuted for their actions as president when they get out of office. I mean, some will deserve it, mind you. Guys like Obama, you know, doing his drone strikes, they don't talk about him because he's considered to be the patron saint of the Democratic Party. But the fact is, he did do some pretty horrendous things.
Is he really the patron saint, or is it just because he was put there for a reason? I remember driving to Pittsburgh. I was taking the back roads. I had to go to a court case when all of that was being talked about. And that's, you know, and talking about Obama and his past and, you know, his code of colors, you know, or race. is questionable too. You know, I mean, I just remember everything about
Most everything about the guy is questionable. I mean, the guy is, in my opinion, he's a fraud. But one of the most honest things he ever said was just before the election, his election into office, we're on the verge of changing the United States, fundamentally changing the United States like it's never been changed before. He was right.
I believe that. And I think that, you know, we assume that we know what the plan is. I don't know that we really do know the plan because, you know, we talked about earlier the youth element that just wants to blow the whole thing up. Well, maybe that's the plan. Blow the whole thing up. You know, it's their time. But yet waiting in the shadows is that dark money, that dark force. They go, now we've got what we want. We're going to blow it all up and come in with our new world order. And, you know, I just don't see anything good in the future. This is the final countdown. It's the final countdown, the final battle. You know, Bible talks about Armageddon. Well, we're going through an Armageddon of sorts, and maybe it's the Armageddon it really talked about. You know,
if you wonder whether we have a free and honest press, I would point you to the White House Washington Correspondents' Dinner of Saturday night. I ask you to just look at it. You can go online and watch the whole thing on replay. Just type in Washington Correspondents' Dinner 2024, and you'll see the entire thing. They had cameras there for the whole night, and you'll see all of these, quote, neutral, end quote, reporters, supposedly nonpartisan reporters, yucking it up with the Democrats. Don't kid yourself if you think that our media is neutral, because it is anything but neutral. These people are arms of the Democrat Party. They're arms of the left, and they're proud of it. You know, they used to hide it. Walter Cronkite, for most of his career, we didn't know this, was a Democrat. He was a leftist. He was even more leftist than a lot of leftists back in the 60s. But we didn't know that because when Walter went on camera, he combed his hair back, he put on his glasses, he looked into the camera, and he didn't talk like one. He didn't let you think for one second he was anything but neutral. Every word had been judged before he went on camera to make sure that it was right down the middle. He didn't want to put his personal beliefs into a story. He did it one time towards the end of the Vietnam War.
Right.
When he said the war should be over. He made some comment along the lines, says, we should get out of this war, we're losing, or something like that. That was the first time in his whole career. And he was a correspondent, by the way, during World War II. But that was the first time in his whole career that he put his own personal opinion into his story. And everybody picked up on it. The whole world noticed it. It's like, whoa, Walter's talking from his heart, not from his script. But that was when they hid what they were, okay? Nowadays, they wear it like a friggin' badge, you know? They wear it like a badge. I'm a leftist, essentially, is what they're saying. You have them out there waving their flags. You know, I watch guys like Stephen Colbert, and it makes me puke. And then I see people like, this week, her guest will be Carol Burnett. Show me your friends, and I'll tell you what you are. You know? So if you like Carol Burnett, and you thought maybe she was neutral, nah, she goes on Stephen Colbert's show, and I'm not going to watch it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have a few yucks at Trump's expense somewhere along the line, even if it's a subtle influence.
And you know, when they throw things out there like that, like the correspondence thing and everything like that, or you get Carol Burnett to say a funny joke, now that gives, like, if I were out of disc jockey again, you know, you take, sit there and things from that are out there, like from a show like that, and if you have a certain persuasion, because you're told, stay neutral, don't get political. Right. But if it's pop culture, it's fair game, and you can play it and, you know, use it. And that's, you know, they want to mix it into the mainstream.
Well, maybe nowadays.
I would never use it, but, you know.
I mean, I used to watch David Letterman when he was on NBC, because David Letterman was funny. He tried to be Johnny Carson, not tried to be the great political, you know, pundit that he ended up trying to be at the end of his career. He walked over to CBS. They gave him a the Ed Sullivan Theater. They gave him a bundle of money. They gave him a fat, fat head because they really wanted him at CBS. You know, NBC had given him the short shift when he came to The Tonight Show. He wanted that desperately. He didn't get it, and he was ticked off. So CBS said, hey, we'll give you that same slot. Come on over here. We'll call it the David Letterman Show, and you can do everything that you would have done over there. So he goes over to CBS, and all of a sudden, you know, he goes to certain cocktail parties and talks to certain people, and he's a leftist, and next thing you know, he's talking politics on his program. And his politics are very one-sided, and he's no longer the funny man that he used to be. You know, he let down a large segment of his fan base. Because I know a lot of people who used to love to watch Letterman. You know, you get Johnny Carson or Dave, even Jay Leno, and you get them aside and you say, you know, what do you think of the late night programming? They would have been disappointed. I know Jay Leno has even said it. He said how the late night, they shouldn't be political. It should be funny. And that's the difference.
Politics should stay out of it. That is actually a personal thing. But we've taken it away from the kitchen table, and we've thrown it out there into the mainstream. And unfortunately, the people that control the mainstream are using that to, you know, to influence and you know, pollute opinions.
You know, I heard Speaker Johnson on. Dan Bongino's show last week. He was a guest. And Bongino really kind of schooled him. And I was really kind of impressed with how Bongino didn't allow him to come on and do a fluff piece like Biden did with Howard Stern. You know, Howard Stern had Joe Biden on as a guest, and Joe Biden could have said anything, done anything, and all Stern would have done is applaud like a seal, because Stern really looked stupid on his program. But that's another thing for another time. Instead of being the hard-edged, you know, reporter, essentially, you're going to have a guest like that on. And no matter, even if you're a personality interviewer, if you're going to have a political leader like that on, it's a one-time shot. You ask him questions that are not all, you know, fluff pieces. But Stern was all fluff. There was nothing there. So he... obviously, he's made a lot of money. He doesn't need the job anymore, and he doesn't need to work too hard anymore either. He just allows Joe Biden to come on and take control of the program. But anyway, so he had Johnson on as a guest, Dan Bongino, and Johnson said to Bongino, mind you, Bongino was a Secret Service agent,
right?
And he was also a New York cop. And Johnson said, well, you know, the reason why I'm into the FISA thing and the reason why I voted for it is, you know, it's not easy all the time to get a warrant. Sometimes you have to really wait a long time. Dan said, wait a second, Mr. Speaker. With all due respect, you're getting bad advice. He says, I can tell you as a matter of fact that there are judges who are on standby who will give you a warrant in 5 minutes.
That's right.
And the speaker was kind of taken aback, like, well, I want to play something for you that he said last week in a press conference. This is the Speaker of the House. Something's wrong with this speaker. Listen.
Look, we are in unprecedented times, okay? We're in dangerous times, as has been articulated here, around the world, and here at home. We need steady leadership. We need steady hands at the wheel. I regard myself as a wartime speaker. I mean, in a literal sense, we are. I knew that when I took the gavel. I didn't anticipate that this would be an easy path. Former Speaker Newt Gingrich posted a couple days ago on his social media that this is the hardest challenge that's faced a speaker probably in the history of the country in the moment that we're in right now. He said, arguably, maybe comparable to the Civil War, but maybe worse.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. He said this is the hardest time to be a speaker since the Civil War, you know, maybe including the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with all due respect, Speaker Johnson, it's not as hard as you think. Doing the right thing is probably the easiest thing that anybody can do. Voting for the things you just voted on, like that budget that had no money put aside for the border, That was an easy decision. That was something that you and I, Bill, could have done in 5 minutes. Does it have money in
probably
there for
the
border? Probably less time. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what? I mean, as Charlie Daniels said, as a Democrat friend of mine said, and we're no longer talking, pick a side. And he needs to pick a side. He's on that fence. He's going. And if you can't pick a side, then, you know, you've got no values whatsoever.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, Bill, says that she thinks that somebody has got something on Mike Johnson, that he's compromised.
Well, that could be. Now, but it puts us in a precarious way, because if you take him out of the role, does he go away and then just, we have a divided right side Congress there that is losing the House. And do we hang on to what we got until the election or what? I mean, this is precarious. And even so, you have the election and it goes the way we want or doesn't go the way we want, and we just fall apart right there after the election. During that time and during the time that the new Congress takes place, the left can have a field day. So,
you know, over the weekend I said that you have a homework assignment. Watch The Sum of All Fears, the 2002 Ben Affleck movie written by Tom Clancy with a wonderful cast, a really good plot. And I had seen it last week. My wife said, hey, can we watch it over the weekend? I said, sure. I mean, why not? I'll sit and watch it with you again. And I did. I watched it again yesterday, Sum of All Fears, even though I'd just seen it. And it holds up even a week later, by the way. It does keep you riveted. And I want you, if you haven't seen the movie, even if you have seen the movie, I want you to take out the character who plays the President of the United States. Okay? Take him out. Insert Joe Biden into that role. Okay? Put Biden in the exact same position as James Cromwell, the actor who played the president in the movies.
Right, right.
Now imagine what kind of outcome we would have with Joe Biden making the decisions during the heat of this moment. I mean, this is, by the way, the plot was a nuclear bomb goes off in Baltimore.
Right.
That has been shipped over in a container.
It's like three chemicals. I didn't watch it over the weekend. I've seen it before, though, where the chemicals are in the machine.
Well, they put the nuclear device. What they do is they find a bomb in the desert. The bomb had been on an Israeli plane, and some junk dealers are out combing through rubble and of old planes, and they find a bomb that is a nuclear bomb that has been sitting there for a long time. They sell it to a arms dealer, who then sells it to a guy who makes it into a more deadly bomb. They insert it into a vending machine, into a cigarette machine, and they ship the cigarette machine over to the U.S., to the docks in the U.S. They literally take it out of the crate and plug it in next to some other cigarette machines or other vending machines.
Right.
And it's a bomb, essentially. It's a nuclear bomb on the docks in Baltimore, which I thought was interesting, by the way, because, you know, it's the focal point right now of another major crisis with the bridge collapse. It just seems ironic that once again we're looking to that harbor for.
It's a major critical harbor. We've known it. People have known it for a long time, and it should be no surprise that at some point in time it came under attack. And it should be no surprise that a week later that they tried to do the same thing at another bridge. It happenstance? I don't think so.
You know,
accident? The second try? I don't think so.
When you have Christopher Wray saying, like he said recently, that he has a lot of sleepless nights because of the terrorist attacks that are going to happen. He says they're going to happen, not that they might happen.
Because he knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, there's something. You cannot leave the border open like they have done without consequences. You know, there's somebody in this country right now who's planning something like that damn movie. You know, whether it be in a cigarette machine or it be in a truck that is shipping to a warehouse somewhere, or maybe it's in a subway system, in one of the old empty tunnels in a subway system. It could be any number of places in the country that they plan.
So
go ahead.
You're thinking we got a sleeper bomb out there somewhere.
I think we have got something. If it's not in place now, it will be soon. And I think this administration has allowed it to happen. Well, and the scary thing for me is I think that they expect it's going to happen before the election. And if it happens before the election,
that gives them the cover to do whatever they want.
What was I
going to
say?
An election?
That's what I was going to ask you. If something happens between now and the election, will they postpone the elections?
Well, one bomb might not do it, but two or three just might. Let's say there's one in the Midwest in a major city, one on the West Coast in a major city, and one on the East Coast in a major city. Would that make us say we got to lock down this government? We get no more elections. And we go forward precariously, and that could be the moment that is the end in the nail in the coffin, you know, for democracy. It's gone.
Yeah, the premise in this movie was that this terrorist organization sets off a small nuclear device, and then when that goes off, it starts a chain of events between the two major nuclear superpowers. They don't know who did what, so they go from one step to another, getting closer and closer with each step to nuclear annihilation, which is the ultimate plan of the original terrorist. They've started a chain of events with that first explosion. And I was thinking to myself, that's exactly what they would do here. I mean,
I just had a weird thought.
They want to blame it on Russia, Bill. Go ahead.
Blame it on Russia. Blame it on Trump. The border's being blamed on Trump. You know, I see all the Democratic memes out there. Well, Trump never, he said he was going to build a wall. He can't do anything. He's this and that and this and that. He is the most failing businessman there ever is. I'll do a little editorialization there. And all these people that say that, you know, okay, maybe he's had a couple of failures here and there, but he's not a failure. No, by no means. I would challenge you to show me your net worth compared to his. And I think that ends the argument.
I have not seen, but I mean, I don't mean they haven't done it, but I haven't seen anybody challenge his business acumen, because anybody who had said he's a failure is a fool.
They are a fool, and that's the people posting little memes, taking the stuff that's out there that's given to them. They want to sell that lie. But, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, we're talking about the sum of all fears and everything, and we're talking about, could there be a bomb, a sleeper bomb, one, two, or three, that's in the United States? And then, you know, one of the things you do if you've got foreign agents around, or you're ahead of a foreign or some kind of evil group, you may not be able to go out and say, okay, guys, time now to do stage one. But maybe you send signals, like, I don't know, the ship hitting the bridge. And then we go back to the Obama movie, Leave the World Behind, where the ship runs ashore. Maybe that movie contained signals.
A signal
to let certain people know what to do at certain times. Now, the ship might have been satellite jammed, which could be done from probably a briefcase in Idaho. You know,
a small nuclear device going off in a city like New York, you know what it would do to New York? It would make it uninhabitable for centuries. Yeah.
So when is the next Obama movie going to come out?
It's already
out.
I don't mean it's his. That movie, The Civil War, that we talked about, it's in theaters now. It was released last week.
So is there a signal in there? And you'll probably need to go see that or see if I can get find a way to see
it. It'll probably be streaming, I would think, within the next 6 weeks, I would think. You know, they release it to theaters, and then before you know it, you can buy it online. That's the next thing.
But here's the caveat. If it has a signal in it, the people that need to see the signal, they bought a ticket, and they already saw it.
Yeah, well, it's true.
So I'm just saying, you know, and I'm speculating, you know, it's a reach, yes. But, you know, if there was something, you know, the signal sent.
So
the die has been cast. Just look for something not good to happen soon.
I saw another good movie this weekend. I've seen it before, but again, when you have time on your hands, right? What's his name? Michael Ritchie's? Guy Ritchie. Guy Ritchie's The Covenant. First of all, Ritchie's maybe one of the best directors in Hollywood today, plain and simple. He didn't go to any kind of cinema school. He didn't get the training. I don't even think he graduated from high school, Guy Ritchie. But it's in his blood, mm-hmm. and he knows how to direct. And he worked his way up as a gopher, and before you know it, he's directing movies, and they're phenomenal. All of his films are good. But this is called The Covenant, and it's about a guy who's rescued by an interpreter. He's in Afghanistan. His interpreter, who's an Afghani, rescues him from the Taliban are trying to kill this guy. He's been injured, and he takes him like 100 miles in the desert and gets him to safety. And then we fall down on our promise to get him a visa, him and his family a visa. So when this guy's recovered in the U.S., he realizes his interpreter's not getting out of the country, and he's literally in hiding. He goes back to Afghanistan and rescues his interpreter. And it was a great plot. The sad part about it is that really happens. It not just to one person. That's happened to hundreds of interpreters when we left Afghanistan. When we pulled out of Afghanistan, we turned our back on hundreds of people that we promised would take care of. A lot of them have been killed since the Taliban have taken control of Afghanistan. Others are still in hiding. To this day, they're in hiding, them and their families. You know, they just released a video, Bill, last week. I don't know if you saw it or not. We've been told by our government that when the explosion happened at the wall, there was no small arm fighting. Maybe there was a burst of small arms fighting, three or four shots, and that was it. Well, they released a video from a body cam of one of the soldiers, and it had like, I guess they had like 60 rounds. It was a firefight, too, that was going on when that wall when that explosion happened at the wall. We weren't told the truth. Isn't that a surprise? We were not really told the truth by our government about what happened over there. So anyway, we've fallen down. The reason why I mention that, you've heard of the country Niger. Niger is the neighboring country to Nigeria. They are on the Niger River. That's where both countries get their name. Niger is the landlocked version. Nigeria has a coast in Africa. Well, there's been a government takeover in Niger. It's been going on for weeks now. And we had troops there. We had a little base there. And they are now, from what I understand, they are stuck. They are stuck, and they are in dire straits. So what has our government done to protect them? Not much. Actually, kind of turned our back on our own troops over in Niger. This is Matt Gaetz talking to the Army Secretary in a hearing. Listen.
General, do you know what is going on in Niger right now?
I know there's some challenges over there in Niger right now, and I don't think that we are actually in charge of that mission that's on the ground.
Well, yeah, we just heard the Secretary say you've got soldiers there, so we're gonna dive into that to some extent. Do you know what the status is of diplomatic overflights to our installations in Niger?
Yeah, I'm vaguely tracking that's a challenge.
I mean, it's not a challenge. It's binary. Are we allowed right now to do diplomatic overflights in Niger? Yes or no?
I don't know exactly.
You know,
I'm not tracking
Madam
it
Secretary,
that close.
Do you
I don't
know if
think...
we're allowed to do those diplomatic overflights?
I don't, but I'm sure the AFRICOM commander does.
Yeah, but you guys just said it's in the budget you're asking for to do these train and equip missions. One of them is in Niger. In Niger right now, the government has stopped us from doing diplomatic overflight missions. So we have Army soldiers right now in Niger who aren't getting their troop rotations, who aren't getting their medicine, who aren't getting their supplies, who aren't getting their mail, and the two senior people in the United States Army are sitting before me, and it's like, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil. Are you going to do anything for the soldiers that are in Niger right now who can't get medicine? Yes or no?
Congressman, certainly. We can talk to General Langley and make sure that...
Oh, I've talked to General Langley. He comes in here and never has really good answers. I mean, I asked him for information about how many of the coup leaders we had trained, including in Niger, and Ghana and Mali and the Ivory Coast. and he didn't even produce his report on time. So pardon me for a lack of confidence in General Langley. What I'm telling the two of you is that you have a responsibility for these soldiers in Niger. And General, you would agree with me with the premise that we should never sacrifice the well-being of our service members to avoid political embarrassment, right?
Congressman, I will tell you, I'm not tracking that anybody's, that somebody in Niger is not getting their medicine or their mail, but I will, follow up.
You don't even know the status after of diplomatic overflights. How about the great power competition? You would agree on train and equip missions. We would never want Russian soldiers at the U.S. installation where we're doing train and equip, right? That's not even a tough question. You would agree.
Yes.
And so if there were Russian soldiers behind the wire at Airbase 101 in Niger, where we have soldiers doing the train and equip mission, that would concern you, wouldn't it? Right. Well, I'm here to tell you we've received reports that they run out of medicine in May, that they cannot get their troop rotations. And you know why you don't know that? Because it's a cover-up. Because the U.S. Embassy in Niger is covering it up because of Secretary Blinken's embarrassment. Because Blinken went there in March of 2023 and said this was the centerpiece of our Africa strategy. This was the model of resilience. And then, lo and behold, the very coup leader we trained takes over the country. And then we struggle with whether or not to call it a coup. We've now called it a coup. Since we've called it a coup, now they won't let us get folks in and out. And so I'm looking at what could erupt as another Benghazi, where there is no mission to do. There is no train and equip right now with the coup leaders. So we got a bunch of people sitting around without their supplies, without their medicine. And the whole reason intelligence isn't getting to us is because the embassy is blocking it because Blinken is humiliated that this failed. And I've used my 5 minutes on everything in the army right now because I have constituents who are there in Niger and they're wondering how to get water. Did you know they can't even get clean water? Did you know that the partner nations that we have at that base with our soldiers, the partner nations, the Italians and the Germans, they've stopped cooperating with us. They won't even help us get provisions to our troops because of the status of forces agreement that we have with the government being deemed invalid. I am just a country lawyer from North Florida, but this strikes me as something the two of you should know about. I get the blank stares, but Secretary Warmoth, can I take as your commitment that you are going to leave here and you're going to see to the well-being of these folks in Niger and that they can get the rotations and the medicine they need?
Certainly, I will make sure they're getting the medicine and the water that they need. Yes, Congressman.
Great. Mr. Chairman, I have a number of unanimous consent requests. First, an article from Politico. It's like a bad movie. U.S. officials who helped train Nigerian troops reel from coup.
Without objection, so ordered.
Russian troops arrive in Niger as military agreement begins, and from the BBC.
Without objection, so ordered.
Uranium, Niger termination of U.S. military ties followed accusation of uranium deal, March 17th, 2024, from the Wall Street Journal.
Without objection, so ordered. Gentlemen's time's expired.
Okay, that's Matt Gaetz. You know, what gets me is we're hearing about this, and by the way, it's still going on, from what I understand, right now.
Right.
Okay? You have the President of the United States in Washington on Saturday night yucking it up with the reporters, who, by the way, should be covering this story like a fly on rice. They should be on this like you wouldn't believe, because we have a bunch of Americans who are literally surrounded by people who want to see him dead. Okay, they're not getting the water supplies, the fresh water. That means they're probably not getting the medical supplies. They're not being given what they need to survive properly in this dangerous environment, Niger. Okay, and this should be a big story. I mean, this is Benghazi part two, and this should be all over the news. And I see nothing about this. It's like, okay, what else can we talk about? You know? I don't understand it. I truly don't. Your thoughts? What do you think?
Well, listening to this guy and you talking about Biden, and the fact that our president doesn't care about these guys. You know, we talk about Trump. You know, they want to talk about Trump and say something that's not true. Well, let's take what they say about Trump and tack that on to Joe right now, that he thinks they're all losers and he doesn't care because the administration is doing nothing for these guys. They've run out of supplies, medication. We can't fly there. We can't do anything. And we leave, and we're leaving them there. We've abandoned those troops.
We should send in.
Administration have.
We should send in a bunch of Black Hawk helicopters, fully armed. We should maybe have a few flyovers with some of our most powerful airplanes to make them realize just what's above them, mm-hmm. and say, okay, guys, we're going to take you out of here in these helicopters, and nobody on the ground is going to cause us any problem. If they do, it'll be something that they will regret, okay? I mean, do a little muscle flexing. Don't worry about the buildings, leave them behind. Get the people out of there. But Biden doesn't give a damn. You know, someone said, and I believe this, someone said that Biden, it's all about ego. It's all mm-hmm. about Joe. His whole life, it's been about
him. It's all a lie. We could take a whole show and start back to when, you know, he talked about all his academic abilities back in 87 when he was running for president.
I was first in my class and number two in law school. And
I did that, and none of it was true. Yeah, and, you know, and yeah, first in his class, I think he was something, he was in the bottom 76%, which means he was down at the F and D range. So, you know, he was a failure. He's talked about everything that he ever did, and it's a lie. Well, you know, he took an Amtrak over the Key Bridge. No, there's no train tracks on it. In his mind, there are. He rode once in a tractor trailer or some kind of truck, a big truck.
Yeah.
But now he's a 18-wheeler, truck driver.
Yeah. Truck driver,
you know, and how many different ethnicities is he? Because.
Well,
you know,
he was raised
Italian, he's black, he's this, he's that.
And many times he'd go to mass, then he'd go to an African Sunday service, then he'd go over to a Jewish synagogue, then he'd go over to a Greek whatever. You know, I mean, the guy is...
He's been arrested twice, but there's no records of it.
Do you know what he did on Stern's show? And this is the lowest of the low, I think. He has, maybe this is where he's going with his campaign because he knows he's desperate, but... He said, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'll try to get as close as I can. He said, you know, when my son, Bo, realized it was his time, but he was still ambulatory and he was over at our house, he said to me, Dad, I know you're going to be devastated, but you have to promise me as a Biden. He says that a lot, by the way. You have to promise me as a Biden that you won't get out of politics, that you won't give up your dream. You have to promise me. He's using his son, Bo, now as a political tool in his chest, you know, to keep himself in office. He's trying to
rotten.
Yeah. He's trying to play on the heartstrings of his dead son, you know.
I've got a daughter, a beautiful daughter that is no longer here. And politically, we would differ ideologically. But I still respect her for that. And I would never, ever, ever use her to sit there and prop up my agenda. You know, and
because you sincerely loved her. You sincerely love her, not love
and
her.
And I respect, you know, I respected her opinion. And I mean, to be honest with you, she liked Bernie Sanders because he was talking about free this, free that, free this, free that, and that's the education that she was brought up with in schools. And that's when I realized, well, you know what? I thought I did everything as a parent. I always did everything to protect and nurture my children. But, you know, I assumed, like a lot of people do, that they're being taught right in the schools, and they're not. You know, now, afterwards, I did go to the schools, and I confronted a lot of stuff and issues. But, you know, my kids aren't the only ones.
Oh, no, I think your kids are the rule, not the exception. You know, I think that a lot of young people, it goes back to what we talked about in the beginning of the show, a lot of young people, they spend most of their young lives working in their little worlds trying to be the best of what they can be. And when they get to college or get into a 18-year-old environment where they have a little more say, people start saying to them, well, you know, your views are important. Your opinion can change the world. You are somebody who should be adding to the debate, not just standing on the sidelines. And, you know, that that's all well and good, but you have to know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. You have to really study what you're doing. If I told you that the Jim Harrington when he was 23 is totally different from the Jim Harrington of today. When I was a young man, I was just interested in my career, my family, my young children, you know, getting a new house or another car or getting some new toy. You know, I mean, this is how you are when you're in that environment at that age. You're not thinking about taxes. You're not thinking about government. You're not thinking about politics. You're just not. You just it isn't part of your lexicon, you know. But the fact of the matter is, it does affect you. And there are young kids out there who think that if they just go out and tell the world what they feel, it'll mean something. It'll make a difference. And you know, they're just being used.
But
as
if the world doesn't care, the people in charge of the world don't care.
They're being used as pawns, Bill.
Yeah, they are pawns. They are pawns.
Yep.
And we're being divided by so many issues
that
are out there. You know, abortion being one of them. You know,
you hear about France, they're starting to evict migrants from the homeless encampments ahead of the Paris Olympics this summer. In case you don't know, the Summer Olympics are in Paris this year, so Paris doesn't want to look like a homeless encampment. So right now, they're starting to go around the city, and they're grabbing all the tents and all the homeless people and moving them along and cleaning up the area so it looks like the Paris of yesteryear and not the Paris of today. So that was interesting.
It's interesting, too, that it's going on there because right around all over in France and right there in the borders, there have been a lot of attacks and bombings and I guess, dare I say, terroristic things. Could this be a repeat of something in the past?
Well, in 1972, you know, there was the Munich Olympics, and they attacked the Israeli delegation. The athletes were attacked and some were killed. And it was it was awful. I'll never forget watching the coverage. It was when the sports network, ABC Sports, went from being a sports network to a news network in the snap of a finger. And all of a sudden, what's his name, Jim? I can't think of his. He was the guy from Wide World of Sports. I'll think of it when the show's over. The guy who anchored it, all of a sudden he became the anchor for the news. He did a magnificent job, and I'll think about it.
He had to. He didn't have a choice.
Right.
So, yeah, sometimes you do what you got to do, and that's what he had to do.
Yeah.
So
I guess that's about it for today. I mean, it's a crazy week coming up, friends. A lot of things are going to happen this week. You know, we may hear from the Supreme Court. They could surprise us. It may be
What do you think they're going to do?
Well, you know, Bill, I guess it's what I hope they do. I hope that they decide quickly and definitively that the president has executive immunity. That will slap this guy, what's his name, Jack Smith's argument to...
Well, that gives Obama and Joe protection, too, although they have the Democratic Party. The rules for the... are not the same rules for me. So
yeah, what do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. Well, my thought was and hope from what I heard is that they are going to rule that Trump has immunity. I think anything else than that, if they say he has no immunity, all bets are off, and Trump is out of the running, and that could be why he had that meeting, like I said, with DeSantis. You know, it's time to mend that fence and get things on the right track. Because there would still be a little bit of time to get a plan B. The Democrats have no plan B. So even if Trump were taking out of contention, if we have a backup plan, then they don't have a choice but to make the election not happen.
I don't know how they can rule against presidential immunity because, like we've said before, it destroys the Constitution. Literally destroys the Constitution.
Well, yeah, it does. But, you know, Ketanji is in there going, well, you know, the First Amendment,
what a fathead.
Your freedom of speech is it gets in the way of the government. Well, you know, if that's in the way, then, you know, the Second Amendment needs to go too. That's in the way of Joe Biden. Well, you know, let's just go ahead and take the whole Constitution and go, you know, it's an archaic thing, and let's just throw it out. Why don't we just go get that Communist Manifesto and adopt that as our Constitution?
Ooh, man. Well, there's a lot of people right now on the left who would like to see that, you know, because it actually is something they can relate to, you know. Anyway, that's
gives him absolute power. And look, friends, whether you want to believe it or not, I don't care that you're on the left. I really don't, you know. But what's going to happen if you get your way? You're not going to get your way. You're not going to get all the look. It's like the two little boys, you know. And there was a pile of manure, and the one kid goes, "Boy, and all this." With all this manure in here, there's got to be a pony somewhere. And the other kid goes, "No, it's a pile of manure." All right.
Yeah. So what
it's
you say
a
is
pile remember, of manure.
Yeah. Your analogies always get me. Hey, listen, that is probably going to wrap it up for us. I think we should leave it on a upswing. If you want to contact us, excuse me, you can go to our website, www.itsanotherday.com, www.itsanotherday.com, or you can go to www.jimandbill.com, and you'll find all of our stuff there, contact information. You can click on a button and get an email and type in your message, and we'll get it. Or you want to call us, you can call us. Is the number up there, too? The number's there, too, right, Bill?
Yeah, the number's up there. It's up there for everyone to find and
good.
See. And
good.
All that.
I guess with that, there's only one thing left to do.
I had to get my yawn out. But after that, I'm all pepped up now. I can tell you this. Hasta la vista, baby. We're out of here.
This is CRN America.